Gudiños en el arco, la defensa es colosal. González, Orlando, La Torre, Nicolás Fuentes y Chumpitas. Chale, Mifrin y Cubillas y el gran Perico León. Bailón y Alberto Gallardo completan.
Welcome back to the Peruvian Waltz Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Galindo. Joining me once again this week is Renato Vilches. Renato, how are you doing, especially in the wake of Sporting Cristal's fifth title in 8 years?
Oh, does it feel just fantastic? As the big Cristal fanboy in this pod, does it feel nice to see a club that was struggling at the beginning of the year just make the biggest turn away I've seen in a while? So, yeah, I'm really hyped to talk about everything.
Yes, and we'll get right into that very soon, but we'll also introduce Christopher Viscardo, back-to-back appearances for Viz. It must be Christmas time if this is happening. We're getting the gift of more Viz. Viz, how are you doing?
That is right. That is right. Just enjoying my first Christmas here in Colorado, where I'm, have recently moved to for school, and enjoying making some gingerbread houses and watching Liga 2. You know, what else could you ask for? It's the best of the world, both worlds.
Exactly. We'll talk Liga 2 in a bit, because once again, another wild day in Liga 2. But we'll start first with, as mentioned, Sporting Cristal. They were, of course, crowned champions over the weekend. It is now their fifth title, as mentioned, since 2012, continuing their trend of winning in even years. How funny is that? But that was won after a hard-fought second leg with Universitario, but eventually Cristal just had too much, and they ended up winning the title. So, Renato, I'll ask you this off the top. Does this solidify Cristal being the best, shall we call it, institution, club, just in terms of organization or otherwise, in Peru? And if yes, and I feel like that will be the answer, what can other clubs learn from them, specifically the ones in Lima who have the advantage of being in the capital?
Yes. The thing is with Cristal is that I think even the non-fans of Cristal can even admit that Sporting Cristal has been one of the, or if not the best club in Peru in the most recent years, especially around the 2010s and hopefully entering like around the 2020s decade. And everything, how the institutions run is honestly, like, to me, advanced for Peruvian club standards. They take the sporting projects very seriously. They are very smart with their reinforcements. And most importantly, they also care about their image and also taking care of anything that goes against them, especially when it comes to indiscipline. And that indiscipline part is something that I feel like all the clubs in Peru, especially some of the ones in Lima, that have to take it seriously, because indiscipline is fortunately a huge problem when it comes to Peruvian players, and even that affects to our national team. I'm looking at you, Christian Cueva. So, yeah, I mean, that I feel like clubs need to look at Cristal as an example. Here's an example of Cristal like taking care of something. Pato Alvarez, a starting keeper for Cristal 2 years ago, for two seasons, but when they find out that he was, let's put it that way, kind of an asshat to his girlfriend and breaking protocols, yeah, I was like, yeah, sorry, but out. And it just shows you that even though Renato Solis was inexperienced, they just wanted to give the opportunity to a academy product to be in the goal line, even if there's mistakes inbound. You knew that at least he was ready like to play and show himself that I'm the next man up. And this is just a result of like, if one guy is not like professional, then the next man has to be up. And that's what every club should do.
Absolutely it is. Viz, I know this is a very difficult question to answer. And I feel like part of the answer is their finances are just more in order than most of the other clubs in the country, at least in Lima. But why is it that Cristal has such a handle on things in comparison to the other teams? It feels like even, and we're not just talking like the last couple of years, it seems like really over the last 6, 8, 10, 12 years, they've just become more and more and more strong and more, I guess, more of a model club. Like, maybe other than the financial side of things, which I know is a huge part of it, why are they so far ahead of most of the other teams in the country?
Well, I think most importantly, they have a solid sporting project. The fact that Cristal does make reinforcements every year, right? We see maybe two or three big signings from Cristal, but then Cristal is also famously known for keeping their players for, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. I mean, if you think about it, how long did Lobaton play for Cristal? What, almost a decade completely? How long did Casulo, who has just won the title, you know, the championship again, I believe he's been here at least since you know, 2011, 2012. I would have to double check this, but I'm pretty sure he's won all five titles this decade with Cristal. You know, that speaks volumes to me. I mean, what other club could you say that keeps their players for that long and has a whole sporting project that is bigger than just winning a title this season? Of course, I mean, we can also talk about some of Cristal's weaknesses. First and foremost, I think that they've always found really good managers, but also managers that only seem to stick around for 1 year, right? And then they get quickly replaced. It looks like they're going to try to solve that issue now with Roberto Mosquera, as I like to, you know, colloquially call him the Yoda of Peruvian soccer. With Roberto Mosquera signing a long-term contract until 2023. So hopefully, you know, that will solve what to me has been maybe the biggest issue that Cristal has had. And maybe the second biggest issue has been to get somewhere in Copa Libertadores, right? You win the championship five times in a row, but five times in a row you can't make it, you know, past the group stage of Libertadores. There is something that is missing there. So to me, those are Cristal's two biggest challenges that I think would make it from a great club to just a top-notch club in South America. But other than that, other than the finances, which are very, very solid, you know, people were scared that with the change in ownership of the club, there would be also some other issues that would come up, but they would have been able to handle that transition fine. And I think it's because they care about their players and they care about the sporting aspect just as much as they care about the financial aspect.
Yeah, and the financial aspect helps them lock down players longer term, which, you know, if that happens with the younger players, then they can get a bigger fee for them. Obviously, look at Fernando Pacheco and other previous examples over the last couple of years. And that's probably going to end up happening here as we enter 2021 as well. More on that in a bit. But Viz mentioned it there, Renato. They have had a problem keeping managers, at least ones who do well, very long term. They're trying to fix that with Peruvian football's own Yoda, as Viz says, in Roberto Mosquera. He did sign that deal to 2023, which I think was massive news for the club. How important was that? Do you think that was the most important signing that they could have made over the next couple of months?
Oh, absolutely. Especially when you got to keep in account that Mosquera was the man that gave Cristal a mega lifeline after the terrible start they had in the season. So, and I think the Mosquera has a lot of stuff plannings to do with Cristal. I know that he's recently said that they're looking for some reinforcements for the Libertadores, including possibly a new midfielder and experienced keeper that can compete with Renato Solis throughout the season, since there's going to be a tight schedule between Libertadores, Liga 1, and also potentially Copa Bicentenario, I believe. Yes, that is. But I mean, I think Cristal is doing the smart move because not many clubs in Peru, or I think most of them, are just terrible when it comes to keeping their managers. And that just sometimes really causes an inconsistency on how like a team does perform throughout each and every year. So I think and take it that Cristal wants to keep going with their great results, and I hope it keeps going that way.
Yeah, it also does help that Mosqueda wants to stay. I mean, why else would he commit long term? And that's pretty long term for Peruvian football. I know people see like, you know, another, you know, 2-3 more years and like, oh, that's not that long of a contract, but in Peruvian football, it definitely is, especially for a coach. Now, he could leave at any point before that. Who knows? He could also get fired, but at least Cristal have control and he's willing to stay for more than just, well, not even a full season, but just, you know, 1 year, which is obviously very good news. Now, on the flip side, Cristal might be losing a couple of players, which is pretty customary, hence the winning a title every 2 years or every other year, however you want to look at it. Washington Corozo, it looked like he was maybe going to stick around just because he had a longer-term deal. It was his first year in Peru after a pretty rough time in Independiente del Valle, which I think Cristal kind of want to aspire to when it comes to the, you know, domestic as well as the continental performances, as Viz was talking about, but I digress. Corozo, now it looks like, has offers from abroad and may leave as a result. He does have a deal expiring in 3 years' time, so if he does go, it looks like Cristal will make decent money. Surprise, surprise. Renato, do you expect Corozo to leave? And if so, I feel like that might be one of the bigger holes in the squad, say for the next couple players we'll talk about after this.
I mean, it really depends on the offer Cristal gets. As you expect that Cristal will not want to let Corozo leave for under like $1,000, because for a player that got like around 14 assists and 8 goals in a season, in his first season in Peru, it has to be at least a good, substantial deal in order for them to find a replacement. But even the thought of replacing Corozo, given how important he was throughout the season, that's going to be tough if someone can imagine. But it's Cristal, and usually they have a good track record of replacing players. So who knows? But if anything, one thing that I'm happy of Corozo's performance in Liga 1 is that it shows that young foreign players that are not from Peru can perform well in our clubs. And if they do well, they will get noticed. And that's what Peruvian football needs. In order to be attracted from other clubs, you can have these players just perform. And not just necessarily Peruvians. You can have like Ecuadorians, Paraguayans, or even Argentinians. And they can just like stand out, and hopefully like clubs like from MLS, Brazil, or even Europe, they can just check them out and say, oh, maybe the Peruvian league is actually a good viable market to get players from.
No, it's true. It obviously has a trickle-down effect. So, you know, maybe that leads to something. Again, though, you do need a long-term commitment, and a lot of clubs just don't have the money and the capabilities of keeping players long-term. But certainly in the case of Cristal or anyone else in their position who has money, I'm also looking at clubs like Cesar Vallejo, for example, they could maybe exploit that weakness in the market to their advantage. So maybe that's something that we'll see over the next little while. Two other players, as I mentioned, who probably are in danger of leaving just based on how well they did this year and obviously the previous season as well, but certainly in 2020, Martin Tavara and Gianfranco Chavez, they have interest from abroad. This has been confirmed. And it's looking like they're probably going to leave. And if they do stay, probably not for very long, you imagine maybe till the summer, and then they might get bought up by maybe even European clubs, who knows. But Viz, what are the odds that both players leave the club, and is it time for them to go just based on their developmental path here?
Yeah, I think for selfish reasons, you can say, you know, for the good of the sport, for the good of Peruvian soccer in general, and with an eye towards finding new talent for the national team, then it's always good to see, you know, Peruvian players go abroad. But as for Cristal, I mean, I think that in a team, in a way, no player is indispensable, you know, is absolutely necessary. I think that it all depends on, you know, if you can sign someone else and if you can, you know, make a cohesive team in the first few months of the year. So I'm not too worried. I think that I'd be more worried if it was another club. But with Cristal, I trust that they have had this moves in mind, and that someone like Mosquera especially has already been looking at what possibilities there are of replacing them. I think that because, you know, this is a transition that's happening gradually, and this is something that where they're probably going to be looking at offers, so they'll, you know, be making announcements in the next few weeks. There's plenty of time for Cristal to make things right, to do things right, and to make signings that are appropriate to the situation where they're losing two key players from this campaign. So I'm not too worried.
Yeah, and they are in the group stage of the Libertadores, so there's no pressure to bring in players, you know, during the qualifying portion, unlike, say, Ayacucho and Cesar Vallejo as well. So that's pretty crucial for Cristal. But one reason why, Viz, that they're able to, I guess, replace players of this caliber all the time is because of their cantera, one of the best in the country, if not, you could argue, the best in the country. So, Renato, with that in mind, which cantera products should Peruvian fans watch out for in 2021, assuming these players that we discussed are sold, or even if a handful of them are sold?
Oh, there's a good amount of them that I believe have a future in Cristal. Three in which I can name, Bersiliza, he's actually been as a super sub throughout the 2020 season, and even I dub him the Peruvian Adama Traore, because my goodness, this guy is a beast physically, and he can even score goals in crucial at the last minute, which that gave Cristal some lifelines. Though I could see him get next season to be his breakout year, because he seems to be a fan favorite with the Cristal fans, and I think Mosquera at this point for next season he would like to integrate Lisa to the squad. Another player is Diego Soto, which to me I believe could be a successor to Tabara, because in the Cantolao game I noticed a bit of emulation of Tabara's passing. Let's say there was passing from far distance and also giving some defensive support to the full left fullbacks, and I think he gave an assist in the third goal, which it was pretty good for a debut. So I would expect to look at Diego Soto if he gets any minutes for next season. And another player that I can also would want to look forward to is Adrian Romani, who was at loan at Carlos Sustain. Now he was with on the bench for Cristal earlier in the season, but due to indiscipline, things got out of hand, and as a result he had to be loaned out. But it seems like he learned his lesson, and he's actually scored a few goals for Ricardo Sustain this year, which is really nice. And I just hope he has a future at Cristal soon, because I think the wingers the attack of Cristal have very good value and possibly could contribute to our national team.
Yeah, they have it seems like they always do, but a couple very good wingers coming through the system, and there are more across the pitch in general. And I think Mosquera, you know, being the Yoda that he is, can see, okay, listen, there's going to come a time when some of these players are going to leave. We got to give these kids, you know, whether they're 18, 19, 20 years old, because obviously their ages kind of range a little bit. We got to see what they can do in this environment and give them that exposure now, so that when the time comes next season that they're going to have an increase in minutes, that they're a bit more ready for it than, say, just throwing them right into the deep end. So that's very important. But yeah, certainly a lot of names to look out for. A bunch of Cristal players went out on loan across the league this year, so I'm sure some of them will get a chance to impress. Before we close out the section, guys, I want to get a few thoughts on Universitario, because look, it was a tremendous season for them when you think about it. They were in the final. It was a couple of years ago. They were battling relegation, for God's sake. And they were in a final. Yes, they were probably in the end outclassed, but overall a pretty strong season for them. And they've gone to work in replacing some of the outgoing players already. Jonathan Dos Santos has gone to Mexico. But Alex Valera was signed as his replacement. I believe that was made official today, Wednesday that we're recording. But Donald Millán off to Cesar Vallejo. But then on the bright side, Alberto Quintero is staying. And then you look again at the flip side, and Alejandro Holberg is mulling a potential move abroad. There's been MLS interest in him for a couple years now. Maybe he finally capitalizes on it. Viz, given the uncertainty surrounding the squad and obviously Angel Comiso's future, I mean, it doesn't look like he's going to stick around, plus the always dreaded Gremco debate, what are you thinking about Universitario's outlook looking ahead to 2021?
I think their priority number one right now has to figure out what's going to happen with Comiso. Comiso, man, he's just a hard man to deal with. You know, he's just a hard person to read. And it seemed like he was not very happy. Of course, you know, nobody's happy when you lose a final. I get that. But the fact that he already had a plane ticket to Argentina within like 6 hours of the, you know, of the last match makes you think that, you know, he wasn't necessarily thinking about, oh boy, let's make a career here at Universitario and think about next year's signings. They really need to worry about that first and foremost. Who are they going to bring on? You know, maybe one of their old coaches might want to come back. Honestly, I would love to see Pedro Troglio come back to Universitario. Who knows? Maybe Pedro Troglio isn't now outside of Universitario's budget, but he's had a great campaign in the CONCACAF Champions League. I think that's something very meaningful. And hey, I he loved being at Universitario. I thought he was a pretty decent coach, and I also liked him, especially when it came to kind of giving younger players a chance. I personally thought that he was very good at that and very good at motivating young players to give their best performance. Like you said, Peter, Universitario was close to relegation, and Pedro Troglio was somehow able to survive for, what, like a whole year and a half without making any signings because they were forbidden from signing anyone because of, you know, financial reasons. To me, at least, that would be someone that I would consider for Universitario. But other than that, yes, the fact that we have players like Colbert that could be potentially leaving is somewhat of an issue. I don't think Universitario is going to be having an issue signing either, though, considering that their biggest rival is not even in the same category anymore. I think, like, for example, you know, with the whole issue with Valera, you know, people were saying, well, he could go to Alianza. Well, he could go to La U, you know, and well, when Alianza is no longer there, you know, that makes the competition a little less steep. So I'm not too worried that there are good players in the, you know, in the peripheries, in the provincial teams that want a chance at a big club. And Universitario is going to have the doors, you know, wide open for all of those kinds of players. The other Valeras that there are out there, I would say, will be flocking to Universitario. At least that's kind of my perception right now. We'll have to see what happens in the next few weeks and if Santa Claus brings, you know, Universitario a new coach.
Exactly. And much like with Cristal, they can relax a little bit knowing that they're in the group stage of the Libertadores. They don't have to rush as much. Which is good news for them. And I'm on board with the potential return of Troglio. I thought that he got the short end of the stick when he left. I thought that he was put in an impossible situation. Did pretty well, considering, and was pretty much disrespected the entire time he was there. But I think what else is new with most Universitario coaches, it seems that they always get screwed over in the end, at least when they don't deserve to. Some coaches do deserve to get screwed by that team sometimes, but I digress. Renato, what are your thoughts about Universitario entering 2021 here? It's a very kind of confusing time for them right now, as it usually is.
Oh, it is, especially with how Comiso was acting in that final, especially with that red card he got, which was just pure of stupidity, in my opinion. But if I can say about 2021... it seems like I've been noticing there's a lot of like news that a lot of players are leaving, and that just brings you a concern that they might not have a chance in the Libertadores in the Liga 1, but they're gonna be losing Hoiberg. I've been hearing that Santillan's gonna be leaving, and Santillan, in my opinion, has been crucial for Universitario in the first half of the run of this year. And even though they could be losing, I still trust that they'll at least be smart enough to try to replace them, especially now that they don't have to, as you said, they don't have to worry about like trying to get into Libertadores because they're already in the group stage. And as for Valera signing, I think he's going to be a very good signing for Raul. Everyone was talking about him and highly speaking of him, even calling him better than Mateus Sucar. And when looking back, I feel like he was actually the better talent overall. And considering Valera's story, it's very interesting because he came from like of the quote unquote grassroots football, and to see him play for one of the top clubs in Peru, that's a very meaningful story. And I wish him all the best of luck. And hopefully he performs very well with Raul next year, especially in the Libertadores.
100%. And it is a very exciting signing from my point of view. I can't wait to see what he can do. We'll switch over to Liga 2, guys. Maybe more specifically, Viz, because for the first time I can now actually say we can get a Liga 2 roundup from Christopher Viscardo. We've been waiting months, if not almost a year, for this. It's finally happening. And Viz, really what a great time it is to be watching Liga 2, because we've been treated to back-to-back incredibly hectic and entertaining match days. So the wild conclusion to the final match day of the Liga 2 regular season, if you want to call it that, was insane. Juan Aurich coming from 2-0 down with 9 men, controversially, to win 4-2 and then get into the playoff at the expense of Pirata and then knocking Alianza Atletico out of top spot, thus setting up a date with Union Huaral, who ended up getting the first seed. Juan Aurich then ended up defeating Union Huaral today 4-3 in another wild game. And then, not to, I guess, be outdone, Alianza Atletico beat Javelines 4-2, which sets up a rematch between those two teams in the final, with the winner, of course, getting promotion to Liga 1 for next season. Small sample size of games, but listen, let's be honest. If either one of these teams gets promoted, it's great. So, Viz, I'll ask you this to start out with. Who is the favorite in your mind based on recent form and just how the teams match up entering this final?
My goodness. Well, I can tell you that it's going to be, it's a little bit of a toss-up, really. I think that, so for example, you take the game that just happened, Chavelines against Atletico, Alianza Atletico de Sullana, right? If you look at what happened, Chavelines had that game under control about 90% of the time. And all of a sudden, at the very, very, very end of the game, minute 74, there comes a goal from Alianza Atletico, and then 2 minutes later another goal, and 2 minutes after that another goal. I kid you not, in the matter of 6 minutes, Alianza Atletico was winning that game 4-2, right? And now we know that they have been, you know, number one on the table for most of the season. In fact, they were number one on the table up until about 40 minutes before the last match on the last match date.
Yep.
was over, right? Now, I think that somewhat of what's happening is that there has been some rotations in the team. There has been some issues with injuries, and there has been some issues with yellow cards, because honestly, at least during the last match that Alianza Atletico played, for the last match date, there was what, like three, you know, red cards given out on either side, pretty much. You know, I like I said in our internal chat, the red cards were being given out like Christmas presents. You know, it was quite an interesting match, and honestly, I would recommend that our viewers, our listeners, take a look at the highlights of that game. But anyways, I think that if they can kind of get themselves back into shape, kind of, you know, let go of all the issues and focus, they could have a real chance at the title. But Juan Aurich, on the other hand, you know, has been showing that garra, that passion, that drive, really, for getting places, for finding goals that looked impossible, for coming back. You know, these last two matches have just been, it's been absolutely delightful to watch Juan Aurich. And so therefore, to me, I think in the end, Juan Aurich has really good chances of making it back to the first division because of that freshness and of that drive, that momentum that they have built in the last two matches that I think can't go, you know, kind of just ignore. I think that it's going to be a very interesting match. We already saw a very interesting match from these two sides just a few days ago, and I am excited for some more of that for sure. We'll be watching, and it's overall, I think that it's been a really good season. It's been a really interesting season. I think that two groups were clearly formed earlier on, those that were in the top half and those in the bottom half. The cream rose to the top and really gave us for a good showing there in the, you know, match day 8, match day 9. It was almost like anyone could win this, really. And it was the case, especially for Unión Huaral, who, you know, was, what, fifth? And then the very last day, on the very last match, managed to finish first, really. And maybe that actually was something that played against them, because maybe if they had, you know, finished third, they would have had somewhat of an easier pairing in the semifinals. Especially when you have to deal with a Juan Aurich that is so focused, you know, on the championship as this one. Unión Huaral, very controversially, you know, was about to tie the game at extra time, 4-4, and the ref said that in scoring the goal, Johan El Cholito Sotil fouled the goalie, right? That the goalie had the ball under control and disallowed the goal. I kid you not, last minute goal, 30, you know, seconds of the match remaining, and the ref disallows the goal. And that is also unfortunate to see, you know, to see the big, you know, flaws of things like this happening with the refs. Then again, you know, did this match deserve to go to penalties? Man, both sides were very, very good, you know, Huaral and Aurich. But at the end of the day, I still want to side with Juan Aurich. I think it was very sad to see them leave the first division a few years back, and I think that they're ready to come back. So I am very much looking forward to what we'll be seeing from both Juan Aurich and Alianza Atlético on Sunday.
Yeah, and obviously if Juan Aurich wins, I'm looking ahead here, but that gives us a Clásico del Norte between Trujillo and Chiclayo. That's always a fierce rivalry, and you know, it's kind of great if that does come to fruition. Fizz, seeing as how this is the final podcast of 2020, we won't be recording after the final is played. So whoever ends up winning, do you feel that both Alianza Atlético and Juan Aurich are equipped to be solid, sturdy teams in Liga Uno next year if either get promoted?
So first, something that I think plays in their favor is the fact that both of these teams are experienced teams that have played for many, many, many seasons in the first division, right? Alianza Atlético played like what 20, 25 years uninterrupted in the first division. It was one of the few teams from the, you know, provincias that managed to turn out consistent seasons in the first division. Juan Aurich, their path has been a little bit, you know, more rough at times. They have been relegated. Well, this is, I think, their fourth relegation, and it's going to be their fourth or fifth promotion at this point. But they're both, you know, Juan Aurich won a championship this, you know, just within the last 10 years. I mean, it's crazy to think about that, you know. What I worry about the most is the fact that there's Liga Uno teams that are already making signings. We've seen Cusco, we've seen Vallejo, we've seen Universitario, and you know, the players are starting to move around, the carts are getting shuffled. And so the problem with us taking so long to kind of see Liga 2 come to an end is that they're going to have somewhat of a disadvantage when it comes to signing players. They have to be quick, you know, which is really hard when you have a 50-50 chance of being promoted or not. Like, you can't be negotiating with Liga 1 players if you're going to get stuck in Liga 2. You know, I think that's a lesson that Alianza Lima has taught all of them. And so therefore, to me, that's the biggest concern. I think that they could still make a decent team. I think, unfortunately, Liga 2 players, a lot of them are older, you know. It is a place where a lot of players go to kind of finish, put an end to their career and go out with a bang. It's not known necessarily for bringing forth, you know, brand new talent. I'm sure that some of the players that are currently with both of their squads will survive if they are promoted. They will stick around. So to me, that's the biggest worry. But I think that the people that lead these clubs are, you know, pretty serious when it comes to Peruvian soccer. I mean, if you're not serious, you will disappear very, very quickly. You know, you can ask that, you know, like Cobresol is an example of that. Sport Rosario is an example of what happens if you don't, you know, get your crap together to, you know, pardon my French. So I'm actually not too worried about either one of these teams being able to have a decent 2021 season if they are promoted. I don't see either team, you know, reaching Sudamericana or anything like that. But I think that they will both give us some decent showings. And, you know, maybe I'll change my mind once I see a few signings.
Yeah, that's always the caveat, right? It's how quickly can they reinforce the squad, especially when they're going to have a more condensed schedule than usual. They're going to be up against it, whoever does get promoted. But, I mean, as you said, Viz, I think the fact that they do both have history is going to help them. And for the most part, it seems like you could imagine they might keep a few of their players around and they'll have a spine at least, so they'll have some sort of consistency entering next year. But are they going to be like a, you know, for example, a Yacuabamba? Probably not. So that's probably the one thing we can guarantee at this point. We'll close out the show then, guys, with, as we have done the last couple of years when we've done our year-end podcast, examining the state of Peruvian football entering the new year. So obviously we did not expect 2020 to go the way that it has. And there was only, at least from a national team perspective, four matches played, but those four matches were pretty disastrous, if we're being honest. And that has drummed up a lot of conversation, certainly on this show, about what's going to happen in the near future, certainly in 2021, which is going to be the big year for Peru, because you obviously have Copa America, you have the qualifiers, that's when things sort of really pick up at this time. So we did already speak at length about La Selección's issues to begin qualifying. So Renato, what is the most glaring problem in your eyes facing Peru in 2021 and beyond? It can be player specific, it can be whatever it wants to be, but what is the number one issue for La Selección right now entering 2021?
It has to be that sometimes I feel Gareca just calls out players who are just often out of form. And I mean, I'm right now some concern with a few like Christian Cueva, who once again is up to his old shenanigans and is out of favor at his club for getting in trouble, trying to get in trouble with his coach, which is the most Cueva thing you can often hear. And considering that this is the 10th time he's done it, it just possibly leaves a bad name to our national team again. And he needs to know that. And I think anybody must know that if you're out of form or not playing, then your position is going to be like contested by someone else. And this national team is in desperate need of competition if we have out of form players. And I'm still concerned about some positions like the fullbacks, since even, let's be honest, they performed pretty bad most part throughout those four qualifiers. But the one big thing that I'm really that I feel like that was missing throughout the qualifiers, at least for the most four matches, was leadership.
Let's be honest. Farfán was okay as a leader, but it wasn't like full-on leader. And when Flores wore that captain's armband against Argentina, I think we can all agree that he felt the weight of it. And that was just not really good, especially considering how out of form Flores was. Now, thankfully, Paolo should be back by hopefully by March. You just got to hope that he's at least recovering and he can like score goals, because if an injury he received, it's possibly could be like really damaging, especially considering he's almost like 37. In fact, he's going to be 37, like, I think, in January 1st, which is kind of like eye-catching, to say the least. But I just hope that things go our way for the 2021, because 2020 has not been a good year for Peruvian football in general, especially considering the international performances of our clubs this year. Yes, yeah. It was disastrous.
Yeah.
Especially starting Binacional.
Yes.
Never again.
Well,
ever.
At least not for next year. We know this, which is very, very positive. But yeah, we won't talk about the performances continentally. We want to close out the show on a high, at least after we get through this portion. Viz, what for you is the most glaring issue for La Selección entering 2021 here?
Well, I mean, I can't help but agree with Renato, you know, 100% on everything he said. You know, I think that it has come, the time has come for us to do what we did during that Copa America Centenario in 2016, which is we need to bring a group of new players that can feed the national team and that can provide for some healthy competition within, you know, the national team players that we already have. I think that, you know, Advíncula needs to be a little scared that someone could replace him. Cueva definitely needs to know that someone will replace him, right? I mean, I can just read to you names of players, no matter what position they play with, right? You have Sandy as a goalkeeper. You have Kluivert Aguilar, who's going to be going, you know, to England pretty soon. You have Oscar Pinto, who I say is pretty decent too. Yuriel Celi, turn 18, he's getting up there. You know, not to mention Fernando Pacheco, who's already playing abroad. I mean, I can mention more players, you know, that I think are young, they're rising stars, that somewhat deserve a chance in the next few months, especially if, you know, to be frank, to be honest, it's already an uphill battle to get to Qatar 2022 at this point, right? So if we're going to be honest with ourselves, if our chances of getting there are slim, we might as well take this opportunity to do something, right? Something for the future of the national team. And if that means new players, and we're probably going to have to lose a few matches and we'll win some others, but we're going to try some young blood in the national team. To me, that is seriously what needs to happen, especially after the games against Chile and Argentina. I was very, very displeased to see a very poor performance from the national team. And I think it's because, you know, a lot of those players believe that they're World Cup quality players, you know, but to be honest, it's been a few years since the World Cup. So I have faith that Garenka will shake things up, right? That he'll come back from his long vacation in Argentina, you know, a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more, you know, less worried, and with some new ideas that we can implement.
Yeah, and I think on the point of, you know, the World Cup was 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago now, and everybody always says, well, you know, somos mundialistas, right? Everything's fine. Everything's going to correct itself. I think Juan Carlos Oblita said it best. Yes, you were World Cup players. Yes, that is true. Yes, we are a good team when we want to be, but that was 2 years ago, and now we played four games and we have 1 point. So now it's time to buck up and start to kind of shake off this, you know, passive and complacent mentality and just go back to the Peru that got to that World Cup in the first place, the one that fought to the end. And yes, okay, a lot of things went their way, but they did have to get the necessary results to get into that World Cup, and they did it. just through sheer determination in a lot of ways. So we have to get back to that. That's first and foremost. But it also starts with being bold, and which Renato talked about. You have to be willing to drop players who are out of form. And I think Oblitas, he did kind of signal that that's going to happen here in the near future. Why that didn't happen to start with, I don't know why. But at least they have now realized that this is a problem and they're going to maybe do something about it. But that's certainly the number one issue entering 2021. And we'll see if Gareca is bold enough to do that. I still feel like, in a way, the pandemic did affect things, because you imagine Gareca was going to use Copa America this past summer to bring in some new blood, see what they could do, similar to, obviously, as Viz mentioned, to 2016 when they had the tournament in the U.S. And that sort of threw a wrench in things. And then obviously qualifiers, we didn't know when that was going to start. That was up in the air until like basically a month before. It's hard. But at the same time, all the other national teams in Peru's position had to deal with this as well, right? And obviously teams with smaller player pools, like a Paraguay, like an Ecuador. Obviously teams like Argentina and Brazil are going to be fine because they have so many players to choose from. But to say that Peru was the only one who suffered is just plain wrong. And that's something that we have to correct entering the new year. So yeah, that'll do it for us, not just this week, but this year for 2020. So thank you everybody for listening the entire year. I know it's been a weird year for us in terms of consistency. We're hoping to get back to more of that in 2021 when things are a bit more normal and a bit more structured. But before we say goodbye for the rest of 2020, Renato, what is your Twitter? And do you have a final shout out, not just for the day, not just for the week, but also the year?
My Twitter handle is Renato_Sun. I just want to give a shout out to everyone's families, since the holidays are basically around here and Christmas should be almost here at the time of this recording. And I hope everyone has a nice holidays. And I hope that with the new year coming in, that 2021 will hopefully be better than this year.
Yes, that's for sure. Viz, your Twitter and your final shout out for the episode and for 2020.
Yeah, first and foremost, the special episode I recorded with Roberto Castro is finally out. If you got nothing else going on during the break, you know, there's that awkward time between Christmas and New Year's that people try to figure out what to do with, you know. We should just have one long party, in my opinion. But but we, you know, you can also sit down and enjoy a little bit of history and enjoy a little bit of the Peruvian waltz. You know, it's a little Christmas present from us to you. And honestly, to me, as this year comes to an end, I can't help but just say, ya cabelo, profe. Just blow the fetching whistle. Finish it. End it. I don't want it. This match needs to end. I will just be happy to turn the page and be able to enjoy 2021. Copa America, we'll be celebrating 200 years of Peruvian independence. We'll hopefully, you know, be getting over this pandemic. You know, I'm really looking forward to what 2021 will bring us, which honestly, it can't be worse than 2020, right? So it has to be better for me. And I hope, you know, that is my sincere wish for all our listeners and for you, Peter, and for you, Renato, and all our friends at the Peruvian Waltz, that we'll just have a better 2021, you know, hopefully you guys can spend this time with families and friends if you're near, and that, you know, that we see the Peruvian national team and Peruvian teams do better in international competition. That's always what I like to see when a new year starts.
100%. I echo both of your sentiments. Just as a reminder, you can follow the show at Peru Waltz. You can follow me, Peter Galindo, on Twitter at GalindoPW. And my shout out just goes to everybody who listened to us throughout the hectic year that was 2020, and hopefully you continue to do so in 2021 and beyond as we continue to provide shows for you. Like I said, hopefully in a more consistent basis starting in the new year. So that'll do it for us. This is the Peruvian Waltz team, and for the final time in 2020, we are signing off.
Corubiños en el arco, la defensa es colosal. González, Orlando, La Torre, Nicolás, Fuentes y Chumpitas. Chale, Mifrin y Cubillas y el gran Perico León. Bailón y Alberto Gallardo completan la selección.